Hi, and welcome to Episode 3, Part 4 of An Intangible Clue, From the Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange, written by Anna Catherine Green. You can find previous episodes on my Audio Boo channel or on iTunes.
"That's where she lies, I suppose," she feelingly exclaimed, "and not one of you knows who killed her. Somehow, I cannot understand that. Why didn't you know when that's what you hired for?" The innocence with which she uttered this was astonishing. The detective began to look sheepish, and the reporter turned aside to hide his smile. Whether in another moment either would have spoken, no one can say, for, with a mock consciousness of having said something foolish, she caught up her parasol from the table and made a start for the door. But of course she looked back. "I was wondering," she recommenced, with a half-wistful, half-speculative air, "whether I should ask to have a peep at the place where it all happened." The reporter chuckled behind the pencil end he was chewing, but the officer maintained his solemn air, for which act of self-restraint he was undoubtedly grateful, when in another minute she gave a quick, impulsive shudder, not altogether assumed, and vehemently added, "But I couldn't stand the sight. No, I couldn't. I'm an awful coward when it comes to things like that. Nothing in the world would induce me to look at the woman or her room. But I should like..." Here both of her dimples came into play, though she could not be said exactly to smile. "Just one little look upstairs, where he went poking about for so long without any fear, it seems, of being interrupted. Ever since I've read about it, I have seen in my mind a picture of his wicked figure, sneaking from room to room, tearing open drawers and flinging out the contents of closets just to find a little money. A little, little money! I shall not sleep tonight just for wondering how those high-up attic rooms really look." Who could dream that back of this display of mingled childishness and audacity there lay a hidden purpose, intellect, and a keen knowledge of human nature? Not the two men who listened to this seemingly irresponsible chatter. To them, she was a child to be humored, and humor her they did. The dainty feet which had already found their way to that gloomy staircase were allowed to ascend, followed, it is true, by those of the officer, who did not dare to smile back at the reporter because of the brother's watchful and none too conciliatory eye. At the stairhead, she paused to look back. "I don't see those horrible marks which the papers described as running all along the lower hall and up these stairs." "No, Miss Strange, they have gradually been rubbed out, but you will find some still showing on these upper floors."
"Oh! Oh! Where? You frighten me horribly! But, if you don't mind, I should like to see."
Why should not a man on a tedious job amuse himself? Piloting her over to the small room in the rear, he pointed down at the boards. She gave one look and then stepped gingerly in.
"Just look," she cried, "a whole string of marks going straight from the door to the window. They have no shape, have they? Just blotches. I wonder why one of them is so much larger than the rest."
This was no new question. It was one which everyone who went into the room was sure to ask. There was such a difference in the size and appearance of the mark nearest the window. The reason? Well, minds were divided about that, and no one had a satisfactory theory. The detective, therefore, kept discreetly silent. This did not seem to offend Miss Strange. On the contrary, it gave her an opportunity to babble away to her heart's content.
"One, two, three, four, five, six,"
she counted with a shudder at every count, "and one of them bigger than the others." She might have added, "It is the trail of one foot, and strangely intermingled at that." But she did not, though we may be quite sure that she noted the fact.
And where? Just where did the old wallet fall? Here or here?
She had moved as she spoke, so that in uttering the last here, she stood directly before the window. The surprise she received there nearly made her forget the part she was playing. From the character of the light in the room, she had expected, on looking out, to confront a nearby wall, but not a window in that wall. Yet that was what she saw directly facing her from across the old-fashioned alley separating this house from its neighbor. 12 unshuttered and uncurtained panes through which she caught a darkened view of a room almost as forlorn and devoid of furniture as the one in which she then stood. When quite sure of herself, she let a certain portion of her surprise appear.
"Why, look!" she cried. "If you can't see right next door! What a lonesome-looking place! From its desolate appearance, I should think the house quite empty."
"And it is. That's the old Schaefer homestead. It's been empty for a year."
"Oh, empty."
And she turned away with the most inconsequent air in the world.
"Violet!"
crying out as her name rang up the stair. "There's Arthur calling. I suppose he thinks I've been here long enough. I'm sure I'm very much obliged to you, officer. I really shouldn't have slept a wink tonight if I hadn't been given a peep at these rooms, which I had imagined so different." And, with one additional glance over her shoulder that seemed to penetrate both windows and the desolate space beyond, she ran quickly out and down in response to her brother's reiterated call.
"Drive quickly as the law allows, to Hiram Brown's office in Duane Street."
Thanks for listening to this episode. The next episode will be coming up very soon. Where is Violet Strange off to now? What's her plan? Bye for now.